On a strangely wintry morning here in Kalamazoo, we heard a couple of pieces from A Winter's Journey by Franz Schubert. They're transcribed by the great Franz Liszt and performed by Leslie Howard in that Hyperion recording. We heard A Stormy Morning and In the Village, two song transcriptions by Franz Liszt of music of Franz Schubert. The connection here is that next Friday's concert by the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra will open with a wonderful Schubert work for strings, his Quartet Satz. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this hour, the world is counting down the days until this concert because it features the world premiere of a brand new concerto. And now on the line, I have the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra music director, Julian Querti. Also, we have Pierre van der Vesthazen of the Gilmore Keyboard Festival, which is the event in which it was supposed to premiere a year ago. And we also have the wonderful American virtuoso and composer, Michael Brown, on the line. I believe everyone is calling in from Montreal, Kalamazoo, and New York. So welcome, gentlemen. This is pretty spectacular getting us all together. Julian, thank you.
Thank you, Kara. It's so great to be back on the air with you.
I don't even have tea this morning. I was too excited. So let's, first of all, listeners, for full details, you can visit KalamazooSymphony.com. But I think as we begin to embark on this story, we will do our best to completely confuse you as to how this all came about, at least I find it a little challenging because there are twists and turns to this wonderful concert, which will premiere next Friday. It wasn't meant to premiere during a pandemic year. It was meant to premiere a year ago. And perhaps, Julian, you can get us started with what you were planning for the 100th season of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, why it's important to bring new music to our stage here in Kalamazoo.
Well, you know, we've been celebrating our 100th anniversary since our season soft opened in September with virtual birthday parties and online stream performances. But I've always found it very important to bring to life works of living composers and composers that relate to the time that we are in. And I was looking forward so much to conducting the world premiere of Michael's Piano Concerto, which was supposed to have premiered on the Gilmore Festival last May. And when the pandemic first hit, we tried to delay and postpone, and then it became really clear that we would have to rethink this project entirely. And I was so happy when Pierre suggested that maybe we had an opportunity to present this concerto during our virtual season. And, you know, the Gilmore was one of the commissioners of this work, and they were so generous in allowing us, you know, to perform it. And having Michael, who's, I think, a wonderfully talented composer and exceptional pianist, bringing him to Kalamazoo to play with the orchestra, we recorded this last month, has been, it was just really wonderful from beginning to end. I really enjoyed it.
Pierre, would you chime in with your tale of bringing this concerto to Kalamazoo? Because it was a joint effort, I believe.
Absolutely. I'm just so thrilled that this is here. The moment is here and that we're finally able to make this happen. You know, when I first arrived at the Gilmore, Dan Gustin, the previous director, loaded me in the car and said, come with me to Grand Rapids. And we went to go hear a young pianist by the name of Michael Brown, who was playing the Shostakovich piano concerto for strings, trumpet, and piano. And I just about, you know, leapt off my chair with excitement of just discovering this pianist. And he played at the festival some of his own works as well. And I think it's so vitally important that we kind of get back to this composer pianist idea, and that's part of a whole another topic. But anyway, so when his agent approached me with the idea to celebrate the Beethoven year in 2020 with this concerto that's Beethoven inspired and for piano and strings, of course, that was very exciting to me. And I really jumped at the chance. And so it was to be part of a larger program. We typically partner with both the Grand Rapids Symphony and the Kalamazoo Symphony and have both conductors kind of share the program. And Julian wanted to work with Michael on this new piece, and I wanted the Shostakovich on there as well. So, and then unfortunately, when we had to cancel all of this, you know, Julian and I were commiserating about this lost opportunity, and we both kind of said, well, why do we have to wait until the next festival for this to happen? So I'm thrilled that Kalamazoo Symphony was also able to adjust and you know, change some things, as we all have had to learn in the past year, and that way we discover great new opportunities. And so I'm just excited, very excited.
Michael, do you happen to recall who talked to you? Was it a phone call? Was it in person? Or did you get an email asking about writing a new concerto for this event?
Actually, it's kind of funny how things sort of unfold in life. We sort of start from one place and one thing connects to another, and then it connects to another, and then all of a sudden we have a phone call like this with Pierre and Julian and the Gilmore and the Kalamazoo. But the piece started actually just, I as a pianist composer, I really wanted to write myself a concerto, you know, something that I could present to an orchestra play. I didn't actually have any association just in the very beginning of the idea really in mind. It was an idea for this Polish orchestra with a conductor named Joseph Swenson, who asked me if I could consider writing something in honor of Beethoven. And he suggested making it for piano and strings. And I was really tickled by this idea. And then I wound up living in Aaron Copland's house, and I sort of...
You ended up...
Continued working on the piece. Well, I lived there for like a month in 2019 as part of this program, this residency award that the Copland House Foundation does to allow American composers to apply and live there. And that's really when I fleshed out the work and sort of considered it and really worked on it and made it Beethoven-inspired and sort of unplugged to work on it. And through a series of things, and I'm so grateful to have had this, to have been at the Gilmore. Actually, my first time was 10 years ago, I was thinking, 2011. I believe you and I spoke then as well.
Yeah.
when I went to play a recital. So I was so thrilled to connect the Gilmore and to connect Julian Quercy, who's a conductor I've always wanted to work with and finally got the opportunity to, which was amazing. And so that's what I mean. It started in one place with just sort of an email about, right, and then an idea that I always wanted to write a concerto, and developed into actually making this video last month.
Pierre, we circled back now a bit to the concept of composer-pianist, which used to be the rule of the day in Beethoven's time, I would say, and one that sounds like you're excited about, like, encouraging new and emerging artists to write their own works for themselves. That's something the Gilmore would get behind.
No, for sure. And the Gilmore has a history of engaging with that and encouraging that. I think, you know, it's a vital skill that often is not really focused on in university or conservatory training because, you know, it's kind of separated with your theory and your you know, solo focus, and composition is generally seen as somewhat of a specialized skill, which I would say, and Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but it should be part of the larger overall musicianship, and that I think any pianist should engage in some sort of composition. You know, you don't have to be the next Beethoven, but just by engaging in the act of composing, it really adds so much to everything else that you play. And then for some like Michael, it becomes part of who they are.
The same might be true of conductors too, Julian. I'm sure you've certainly had to. You came up with a beautiful set of variations on "Happy Birthday" this year. So, I mean, that should that's one of those skill sets that's wonderful to have as a conductor as well.
Well, it's something that I really think the same as Pierre, that learning how to write music reveals so much about how others have written music. So the music that we perform, you become so much more informed. And actually, when Michael was in Kalamazoo, we had a number of very interesting conversations about this, where he basically revealed that, you know, when you're writing, and I feel this too, when I've written and I've then had to conduct my own pieces, that you write without really thinking about performing it. But then when you have to actually perform it, you look at it with completely different eyes. And even sometimes you think, you know, what was I thinking there? This is going to be so hard. But, you know, when you're composing it, it seems like it's the only thing that works there. So I remember, Michael, we had this conversation a few times where you said you had to take off the composer hat and put on the performer hat in order to just approach your music. And I thought it was just so interesting.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was definitely like when it would show up for those rehearsals, I felt like I was just wearing a lot of hats, that people asking questions about the parts and Julian, everyone asking a lot of questions, and at the same time trying to, you know, focus on my playing and create a kind of chamber music collaborative aspect to the work. And so I was sort of doing a lot of things. And then at one point I thought, well, at this point, the piece is what the piece is in a certain sense, that it was sort of a long process and I've really dissected it. I really need to think of it like I'm about to play a Shostakovich concerto or Rachmaninoff concerto. I was sort of not phrasing when I was playing, or I was not being expressive when I should have been, when I would listen back to myself. I thought I was playing in a really boring way, frankly. And I said, well, why am I playing like that? That's, you know, because, and I think I was being too literal. And then I tried to approach it like I would approach someone else's work. And for me, that was a better direction, I would say.
Wonderful. This is 89.9 Classical WMUK, and you're hearing from the music director of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, Julian Querty, the executive director of the Gilmore Keyboard Festival, Pierre van der Vesthesen, and composer and concert pianist Michael Brown, whose brand new Piano Concerto No. 1 will premiere in a virtual concert on Friday at 7 o'clock, 1 week from tomorrow. That's Friday, April 30th. And you can find full details at KalamazooSymphony.com. Tickets are available there. You can watch the concert as it premieres live, and you will have access to see the performances further down the road, a few weeks beyond that date. So if Friday doesn't work out, there's always a way to access this important premiere, brand new music written for the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra in celebration of Ludwig van Beethoven, which is where I wanted to go next, Michael. So I associate you with a wonderful American sound, as someone who has had a lot of deep dives into, say, Bernstein recently, your association with Leo Smith, working in the Copland house, there's certainly just a natural sense of 20th century America with you, with your playing. So how did Beethoven come into this? Is it a combination of sounds here?
Well, I would say that all of what you said is very true, and I think as a composer and a performer, I'm constantly evolving and learning and appreciating new things and new concepts and new sounds. And the idea of Beethoven, I mean, my concerto, Julian can correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't really sound like Beethoven, but it's not really going to be overtly Beethoven, but it's Beethoven in the sense that it's uses, I guess, a similar way that he takes these little microcells of music, little DNA, little motivic fragments, and then builds the whole movement on it, or has the structure of a three-movement concerto with a sonata form with a big cadenza in the first movement and a slow movement that's really kind of inspired by Beethoven's third piano concerto, where I kind of embrace with the pitches of Beethoven, but kind of all reordered and with lots of new sounds as well. And then a kind of what I would say is a rondo finale type, which is sort of fast, lively final movement. So in a sense, it follows the typical structure of the Beethoven sort of classical romantic concerto, but has, I would say, my sound world, which of course is my own thing that combines the composers that I've loved, which includes Copland and Beethoven as well.
Having it be your sound is very, it's important. It reminds me that, you know, as his legacy is set in stone now, but Ludwig was seeking attention for his music, and his concerti were calling cards. You know, this is me. This is my approach. This is how I bust some rules. That is Beethovenian in a sense, being yourself and putting yourself out there, Michael, as a pianist and a composer. Is like, yep, I wrote my own piece. This is how it's done. Who else in this room? I know that Julian has heard the piece and conducted the piece. And Pierre, have you also had a sneak peek of Michael's work? Can either of you talk a little further about how you hear this new piece, this music?
Well, I've only heard little sneak peek, so I'll have Julian take that one. But I just wanted to, if you don't mind, with the Beethoven connection, just one little thing that I think, isn't it wonderful? You know, as Michael was saying, working with the musicians, with the orchestra, asking, you know, answering questions and fine-tuning and, you know, sort of rolling up your sleeves, working on this piece in real time. That was Beethoven's world. This is exactly how this worked for him as well. And it's just so beautiful, that connection, and that we still allow space and for that, and that Julian still allows space for that at the Kellen. So I just commend you all for that.
Well, I can jump in here too, Kara, and say, I mean, Michael gave a really wonderful description of his piece. It's vigorous. It's lively. It's compelling. It's really, I think, from beginning to end, it tells a great story. And for those listeners out there who want a sneak peek, I would just like to mention that tomorrow we will be releasing a short film online. It's about a 10-minute film that looks at the writing of this piece and the recording and the performing. And we go all the way back to the very first Zoom calls between me and Michael, all the way through the recording, with some great footage from the Copeland house. You can see where Michael was writing. And this film will tell the story of the making of the concerto. So for those listeners who are interested, look on the Kalamazoo Symphony website and look in our social media to find this film, which will be coming out tomorrow.
And a reminder, the premiere is next Friday, April 30th at 7 p.m., and full details are at kalamazoosymphony.com. Not all works end up becoming standard. A lot of brand new pieces are premiered and given a first performance, and then they're hard to find. What do you think, Julian, could be enduring about this work that might attract it to other orchestras and even other soloists?
Well, I mean, okay, so my main point was just going to be that here you have such a unique opportunity to present a soloist playing his own piece. And I think that that's something that we
see so rarely today, that it can really, I think, help to give this concerto some life. When you can have both the composer and the soloist at the same price, you know, it really, I think that should be really, really attractive to many groups. This piece, in fact, was a co-commission by Michael. You remind me of the name of the Polish orchestra.
Right, it's the NFM Leopoldina Orchestra in Wrocław, Poland, and the Gilmore, of course.
Right, and the Gilmore. So I imagine you'll be playing it in Poland at some later date. But do you not already have another performance scheduled in the U.S.?
Well, I had several that got all canceled due to that, 2020. But supposedly I'm supposed to play it the first week in June in Maryland with the Maryland Symphony, which is an orchestra I've worked with a few times. And I'm very pleased about the response so far when I send it to a conductor that they have wanted to program it. That's very encouraging for me as a pianist and a composer, and especially spending 2-3 years of my life working on it. It's nice to see it sort of coming to life. And I just wanted to add what we said a little bit before, what Pierre and Julian were saying, which is that when you give Julian or a conductor the score, I don't believe that that's necessarily the full piece. I believe that that's a piece of the puzzle. It's a large piece, but Julian's ideas and his comments and the collaboration with the musicians, I mean, I feel like the piece is still evolving, even now.
Really?
And
are there parts that changed or even slightly with input from Julian or?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we were changing things up until, we were, let's say, honing and refining things up until the recording session, for sure. The concertmaster would say, you know, we could do it like this, or maybe we could do this and we can divide the harmonics this way, or we can do this viola solo without the muse or with the muse. So sometimes my first impressions were, my gut was not always, when you put it in front of a group of people, was not always the direction we went in. So it was very cool to me to have the input from other people, from the musicians that are actually playing it, from the conductor that's actually conducting it. And of course, it's also fun to say, no, you're wrong. I'm right. You know,
sticking with my guns. You mentioned the concertmaster. I believe that would be Junqing Lin, a marvelous musician who is currently serving as a concertmaster. Is that right, Julian?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Junqing was wonderful. He was a concertmaster on this whole program.
I didn't realize that, you know, his input would be important too, that it was like a community decision-making in part.
Well, you know, he really does have a lot of input when it comes to the phrasing, because what happens, Michael will write the piece and then we'll get the parts, but Junqing will spend hours with those violin scores, putting in the markings and the bowings and basically conceiving the approach to so many of these musical phrases that really he brings them to life. So it is a very important part of creating the music. He wouldn't change any of the notes, obviously, but you can still say so many different, you can say one phrase so many different ways. So it really is important.
Was there an atmosphere of especially people wanting to get this right for the rehearsals, as it's such an important new work and it's such a celebration?
Everybody was, there was a great energy and everybody was so excited. I mean, bearing in mind, Michael was our first soloist in more than a year. The orchestra had not had an external soloist for more than 12 months. So it was really a big momentous event, and everybody was really thrilled to participate.
Pierre, would the Gilmore have provided the piano, or the KSO? KSO also has a beautiful piano to use.
Oh yes, I'm sure they use the Philly.
I'm just trying to find a way to have you comment again.
Well, and we've been fortunate. Our own piano has been in for some service and maintenance and so on, and so the Kalamazoo Symphony has graciously had us use their piano this past few months, and it is a beautiful instrument, and I'm sure Michael can comment even more on that, but the guest pianists that we've had here have found it very responsive and beautiful tone.
Yeah, any problems with the piano, Michael?
No, I just want to say that as a piano nerd that I am, and I'm actually fortunate to have 2 9-foot pianos in my New York apartment, that whenever I go to a place where the pianos are just incredible, like at the Gilmore Festival with the Kalamazoo Symphony, it's just like a breath of fresh air that the piano technician, Dee Marie, was just tuning all the time. And she treated the piano with such love. And that is rare. I mean, that doesn't happen so often. As a pianist, you're always at the mercy of the instrument that's put in front of you when you go around the world. And sometimes you get lucky, and sometimes you know. And every time I go to Kalamazoo, I know it's going to be a beautiful instrument. And that changes everything, because if you sit down in front of a beautiful piano, it changes your whole approach to music making. So that was always very comforting.
Just to give you all a quick overview, I'm speaking with Julian Quarty, the music director, conductor of the Kalamazoo Symphony, Pierre van der Vesthazen of the Gilmore Keyboard Festival, he's the executive director, and composer and pianist Michael Brown, whose new concerto premieres a week from tomorrow at 7 o'clock in a digital concert available at kalamazoosymphony.com. Tickets are available right now. And gentlemen, I did save something special for the end of the hour. It's Michael's performance of Leo Smith's arrangement of tunes from West Side Story that were performed by Michael at the 2018 Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. So we can all look forward to that coming up. And I didn't want to leave out the other works on the program, Julian. You're starting with Schubert and ending with a beautiful Bartok piece. So perhaps you could put it in context with how it works with the Brown Concerto, and what made you program the other two pieces, Julian?
Well, it was hard to come up with something that would be the right companions for Michael's piece, but I think I kind of found it. The Schubert is this wonderfully dark, intense, but sublime single movement work that he wrote for string quartet. And you know, Schubert, he often had this problem that he would start something and then he would go somewhere else and he would not finish it. You know, we have very famously his unfinished symphony. This string quartet may have also been intended to have been a larger work, but whatever happened, he only left us a single movement. And I just thought that it was such a powerful piece. It had so much of an orchestral flavor to it that I made this particular arrangement for string orchestra. So originally it's a string quartet, just four players, but
wow.
In the version that we play, I've added a double bass part and changed just very, very few things to make it work as a string orchestra piece. And it had a very classical, romantic flavor, a lot of string playing. I mean, a very, very profound and wonderfully sublime message. And then we have Michael's concerto in the middle, which is this homage to Beethoven, but in his modern musical language that I think reflects the Schubert, but looks much, much farther forward and brings us into this century. And then the final piece on the program is Bartok's Divertimento for strings. And this is a piece, I mean, it's so interesting to me. It's a piece that was written and finished in August 1939, probably one of the darkest moments in Western European history, just before World War II breaks out. and Bartok, you know, living in Hungary still and writing this piece, there's not a minute of this piece that is depressing or anxious. It is full of life. It is full of character. It's full of folk charm. It has a wonderful set of solos for all of the principal string players, the concertmaster, the principal second violin, the viola, the cello, even the double bass have solos. And the last movement is really like a folk festival. It goes at lightning speed. It's so much fun. It's one of my favorite pieces of all time. And I was so happy to be able to link this together with Michael's concerto and the Schubert. I think this creates a wonderful program and a wonderful evening.
As we've talked about before, in a year of difficulty, the reduced ensemble numbers have allowed you to choose some pieces you love that you couldn't program before, and that would include a divertimento for strings by Béla Bartók and your new arrangement of the Quartet Satz by Franz Schubert, which for me is just, it sets up drama. It serves a wonderful purpose in that way. And a lot, then along comes the Brown Concerto number one. Just a few minutes left here. Michael, are you already thinking about or working on a concerto number two, and will it be for full orchestra and piano?
I just thought about it when you mentioned it. I've been spending the pandemic writing a bunch of sort of solo piano pieces or just sort of small things that one can do isolated, and that was really comforting during the pandemic. But right now, I'm still thinking about this piece and still just revising the parts and taking Julian and the orchestra's input and not making dramatic changes. But the piece is still breathing, I hope, and I'm still going with that. But it surprised me how much. How difficult it is to write a concerto, how much time and space one needs to really to do this. And I'm sort of, even though I was rather disappointed last May that the way that the festival had to get canceled, in a way, this gave some more time to think and breathe. And Julian and I did all sorts of FaceTime rehearsals leading up to the week in Kalamazoo to sort of get to know the piece. So it's interesting how things work out in life, but maybe at some point I'll write a second concerto for full orchestra. That would be really fun.
Well, I have a suggestion.
Wanted to add here, in this world that we find ourselves. Hey, Kara, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was talking over you. Please go on.
Oh, no problem. No, I was thinking, you know, in this world that we find ourselves, sort of the thing that we haven't really addressed here is, you know, we're in this world of live stream, you know, it's been a constant with all of us. And but the beautiful thing about it, and you had a question earlier about, you know, other orchestras or soloists taking up a new concerto. Well, the beautiful thing of it being live streamed or recorded is you can go back and hear it again and again and again and rewatch and live with it as an audience member, as a musician, as anybody out in the field there who is working with orchestras or festivals and so on. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity that we probably didn't think about a decade ago. So, you know, when I was in Cleveland, there was this wonderful patron of the arts, you know, and she, whenever a new piece would come along and we'd ask her comments about it, she would say, well, I'd have to hear it again. And so I would encourage audience members to rewatch, hear it again and again.
That's a terrific suggestion. The premiere is a week from tomorrow at 7 p.m., Friday, April 30th, via the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra website, kalamazoosymphony.com. It will be available for future viewing and listening. And the concert, of course, begins with Schubert and finishes with Bartók. I'll leave it to you, Julian, to put a bow on this conversation and invite our listeners again to tune in next Friday. And then we'll hear music by Leo Smit, arranging from West Side Story and played by Michael. Julian.
Thank you, Kara. Well, I believe I speak for Pierre as well as myself and the whole Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra in thanking Michael for this wonderful opportunity to play for the very first time his piano concerto in such a wonderful setting and with such great people. So I really invite all your listeners to tune in next Friday and watch the premiere Friday, April 30th, beginning at 7 p.m., KalamazooSymphony.com.
Congratulations to all of you. I know I'll be tuning in. Kalamazooans will be tuning in, and so will the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.